Hey everybody, Dwan Bent Twyford. Welcome to Beat the Bank Boot Camp. We are gonna have so much fun over the next 6 weeks. That's right, this is 6 weeks. It's called Beat the Bank Boot Camp, and it is 6 weeks long. I'm Dwan Bent Twyford, otherwise known as Dwonderful, Dwantastic. And you guys are my Dwaninators, like Terminators, but Dwaninators. And we're gonna kick butt and take names in the real estate investing arena. So I am so happy and thankful that y'all are on this call with me. I'm super excited for everyone to make a bunch of money. And I'm just excited to teach this. I have not done a Beat the Bank boot camp in a long time. It's been like 10 years since I did the last one. And as you know, the markets have changed. So I'm super excited to get back and talk about short sales and how you guys can make so much money. And I know how much money people are missing and leaving on the table, and you're letting the banks take advantage of you. And it's only because you just don't know the difference. So my job is to help you get a deal closed. Everyone should be talking to me on Skype right now. Get a deal closed, be on Skype asking me questions. And my job is to change your financial future. So if I can change your financial future, I have done my job that I have set out to do. I'm looking to make some millionaires. So can I get a little whoop whoop? Who wants to be a millionaire? Whoop whoop. I know everyone does, right? But here's the thing. Sometimes people say, "Oh, Dwan, I want to be just like you. I want to have two or three houses and buildings and a great spouse, and I want this and I want that. You're so pretty and you're so thin and you have so much money, and I want all those things." Well, do you really want those things? Because you know what? Having those things, none of that comes easy. Being a millionaire, it does not come easy. You have to work. Staying in shape doesn't come easy. You have to eat right and work out. Having an amazing husband, that's not easy. I've been married, Bill and I've been married 16 years actual of marriage, and it is not easy. I will tell you straight up, I love that man, but I want to kill him as much as I want to love him. So it takes a lot of work to stay married for so long. Some of you probably been married like 40 years. You're like, no, it's a piece of cake for me. So good for you. But all those things, but mainly the millionaire thing. People say, oh, I want to be a millionaire. That's what I want. It's my goal. It's my dream. But the thing is, how do you plan to do that? It is so easy to say, I want to be a millionaire through real estate. I'm on a boot camp for the next 6 weeks. That's how bad I want it. But the thing is, after this boot camp, how bad do you actually want it? And are you willing to do the work that it takes to become a millionaire? And the reality is, most people are not. So there is so many ways in real estate to become wealthy, but all of them are going to actually require you to do some work. So if you thought that this was one of those get rich while you're sleeping, print $1 million checks at night, work from your pajamas, it's the 30-minute work week. If you think any of those things, you are on the wrong call and you have the wrong mentor, because that is not real life. Those programs that people sell you for 1900 bucks, some of them. Print checks while you sleep. Never have to meet a customer. Put in offers around the country. Do this, do that. And everyone buys into that crap. Like, oh my God, people just can't be that stupid. They just can't be. And the people that buy into all that, it's because they do want to get rich quick. They do want something where they don't have to work. But if you want to get rich without working, just play the lottery or something. You have a better chance than spending, $2,000 on some stupid program that you actually have to work. That kind of stuff makes the promoter a lot of money. It doesn't really help you. And if you've known me for any length of time or seen anything about me on all my last 20 years being on the internet, then you know that I am all about helping people. and welcoming people into my real estate investing family. And we're all about family, and family takes care of each other. That is just the universal rule. When things get tough, family always has each other's backs. So you're not part of my tribe or my gang or whatever trendy word people are using today to sound cool and hip. You're a part of my family. And I am fiercely loyal to my family and my friends. And therefore, I am fiercely loyal to you. And I'm going to guide you step by step by step on how to make a whole bunch of money. But I expect something from you in return. And what that is I expect you to actually do what I'm going to teach you to do. Otherwise, you're going to spend the next 6 weeks with me, do nothing. Nothing in your life will change. I'll run into a live event somewhere and you'll say, oh my God, that Beat the Bank boot camp was so good. I loved it, Dwan. You should do it again. And I'll say, well, did you do it? Did you follow it? Did you do everything I said to? No. I got busy, life got in the way, you know, one of my kids got sick, and then the car broke down, and then, I don't know, it was soccer season, and blah, 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 yep. Bunch of excuses. So, I don't allow excuses. I started off as a super, super, super broke single mom, and my daughter was 8 months old when her dad and I parted ways. And I am telling you something, I had a tough road to hoe. There was no doubt about that. My first couple years in this business, just as a single mom in general, were so, so difficult. I was so broke. I didn't even have a car. I mean, it was, if you could just like think of a disaster and stamp that right across my forehead, I was a hot mess disaster. But, you know, if you've heard me say, I wanted to raise my daughter, and I did not want to raise my daughter in the daycare system. So I did everything possibly humanly possible to not have to put that child in daycare. And I was bound and determined to work for myself no matter what, because my daughter was not going to go into the daycare system. And my drive and my determination and my fear of daycare and somebody else raising my child was enough for me to motivate me. And that was my why. So why are you doing this? What is your why? Like, do you want to give your kids a better life, better college, take care of elderly parents? Do you just want to dig out of the hole financially because you're just buried in a financial mess right now? Do you want to own rentals? Do you want to work for a charity? Do you just want to be rich and hang out and not do anything? Like, what is the reason? Why do you want to do this? So I think when you determine what your why is, why do you want to be a millionaire? Why do you want to be a millionaire real estate investor? Why do you want to be in real estate? Why do you want to work with me? Think when you can put all your whys in order, it makes everything else come together for you. So for me, I did not want to raise my daughter in daycare. I did not want to go on to welfare, which several of my friends did when they suddenly found themselves being single moms. I was like, well, I surely don't want to be a welfare mom. I mean, that's, you know, and again, don't mean to hurt anybody's feelings, but the way I was raised in the Midwest, as welfare were for just lazy people that didn't want to work. Now, I completely understand now, all these years later, because I have many Section 8 rentals, so I get welfare. I understand the purpose of welfare. I specifically rent to single mothers who are on Section 8. But that program is designed to pay the bills for the mom, take care of the kids and the medical. The moms go to college. They graduate from college. Then they get a job. Then they start a savings account with the Section 8, with the government. And whatever the people put into the savings account, the government matches. And when you have 3% saved up, you buy a house, FHA, you're automatically guaranteed to get approved for the loan, and you move into the house with your kids and work your way off the system. It is meant to be a temporary system. Now, I've owned rentals off and on for 20 over 25 years. 99% of them have always, I've always rented them. Once I discovered Section 8 and what it was, and that it helps, you know, single moms, they've got lots of kids and most times lots of dads and stuff like that. I thought, you know what, I could help those women, and, you know, they'll go through college and that'll be great. And I'll help them get on their feet. This will be the greatest thing ever. So in 25 years, and I've had hundreds of rentals, I have had one person that actually went to college the whole time, matched the savings, did the whole thing, and then was able to go and buy a house. And do you know that when she was all said and done, she goes, well, Miss Dwan, I'd really like to buy this house. I was like, what do you mean this house? My house? My rental that you're living in? She's like, oh, but she had been there. I mean, this took, you know, like 8 years. It was like 8 years later. And she's like, I'd like to buy this house. I mean, I raised my kids here. Had my last baby here. You've been so good. You helped me. And I'm off of welfare. I'm helping other women. And I was like, oh, man. It was actually one of my favorite rentals. Because I had fixed it up. And it was really nice. And I had done personal things for her. I put in French doors. And she was all kinds of really nice stuff. And I was like, ah. Oh. I want to sell this house. But she really wanted it. And she was just like, I knew she was going to be so brokenhearted if I didn't. So I said, you know what? I'm going to sell this house to her. So I sold her that rental, got it appraised. She still to this very day, I go by there once in a while. Still to this very day, she lives in there. Now her kids are grown up. She's raising some grandbabies. She's working. She's doing the right thing. So she, as a person that did not want to be in the welfare system, all the rest of the tenants that I've had are taking in nieces, nephews, grandkids, whatever they can do, have more babies to get more money because they want to stay on the system. So I did not want to choose that path. I said, no, I'm not going to choose that path. I want to work and work for myself, and I want to raise my kid. So with no skills, no nothing, I started rehabbing houses. And I would move into the house, fix it up, sell it, and then pack a bale and move into the next one and fix it up and sell it and move and fix up and sell. And that's how I did it. By the time Ayla was able to start into kindergarten, I was making good money by then. I mean, this is, you know, four years later. So I'm making good money now, and I can afford to have a crew, and I can live in a house and fix it up, and I can have two other houses going on at the same time. And I self-taught myself all of this stuff. So when Ayla started kindergarten, we stayed in that same house all the way till she got to junior high. And then I actually had a house custom built and moved into that house, which I still own today. So think about, like, why. Because this is a six-week boot camp, and we're going to be talking a lot. Most of it's going to be teaching, but some of it, you know, I'm going to have a, you know, a little philosophy here and there. But I want you to think about, why do you really want to do it? And you know what? If you don't want to be a millionaire, that is perfectly fine. That is. You do not have to say, oh, I'm going to be a millionaire. That's what I want. That's what Dwan wants me to be. No, you know what I want? I just want you to be happy. I want you to have all your bills paid. I want you to be happy. And I want you to enjoy your life. I want you to enjoy what you're doing in your life. So for me, I enjoy teaching. So I'm sitting here right now talking into this computer and getting ready to teach you a whole bunch of stuff. And I enjoy this. It's a nice afternoon. I've got my loungy stuff on and my leggings. And I like doing this because I like to see the results of people who become financially free. And so financial freedom, I want you to write this down on a piece of paper or typing or on your computer, whatever the heck you're doing right now. And just write in what financial freedom means to me today. So, like, today, what does financial freedom mean to you? So when I first started making a little bit of money, I was just excited to be able to pay, like, the phone and the electric when they were due at the same time and not have to be calling up, getting extensions, or having one shut off. I mean, I can't even tell you how many times I've had my water or my electric or something shut off. And I was just excited to be able to pay all the bills and have money left over. It's like, oh man, this is the best thing ever. And then after I did that first house, I made $22,000 on my first deal. And I thought, holy cow, this is the most amount of money I've ever had in my life, in my hands. 22,000, I'm rich. So I was so excited. But if you look back like 25, 26 years ago, I mean, that's a lot of money today. That was a super a lot of money back then. And like in the late 90s, the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, that was a lot of money to have in the bank. And then my second house, I made like 50 grand on my second house. And I was like, oh my gosh, I am officially rich. Now, of course, I understand now that does not make me rich. That makes me just like, I'm rich because of this deal, but I still have to do another deal. I got to keep doing it. But the very first thing I did for myself, when I had all my bills caught up and I was doing a couple of houses and I had money in the bank, I thought, okay, what would I like to do for myself that will really make me excited about this money and what I'm doing and what I have? And the first thing I did was hire someone to clean my house. That made me feel like I was on the path to wealth because wealthy people have housekeepers. And I hate housekeeping and laundry and dishes and grocery shopping and errand running. And I hate stuff like that. I find it to be mind-numbingly boring. And my houses were always clean. But may I tell you what? It was something like a chore, like nobody's business to get me to want to clean the house. So I thought, I'm going to get a housekeeper. So I had a girl first that just came in once a month and made a little more money. And she came in twice a month and I made a little more money. And then she came in once a week. And then I made a little more money. And she would do all my laundry and she would cook and she would prepare meals for me. And then she would take off my dry cleaning and she would do everything. And I thought, man, this is so worth the money. I have so much more free time to spend with my daughter and spend investing in real estate. I just have so, and I'm so much happier not having to do these stupid tasks. Because again, you may be that person that loves to clean their house. I know two people specifically. They clean their house from the top of the ceiling to the floor every day. Now, I personally think that borders on OCD or something like clean house syndrome, something that I definitely don't have because I don't understand it. But they're just like so proud. Oh my God. And I mean, you can eat off the floors, everything sparkles. It really is beautiful. But I look at that and I'm like, oh my gosh, who would spend so much valuable time doing such a mindless task? So you guys can't get mad at me when I express my opinion. I'm sure you have opinions too. And you may think it's a great thing you love, and you may not like it either. And I got a guy to do my yard work. I had a guy that would come and wash my cars and clean my carpets all on a regular basis. So I started having all these things done for me because that made me feel good. And it made me feel like I was on the path to financial freedom. And it made me feel really good about how hard I was working for my money. Because again, I was moving into houses, living in a rehab 24 hours a day, spending time with my daughter 24 hours a day. But it was intense during the rehab because I'm living in it. So everywhere you go, there's something that needs to be done. You go to the bathroom, it's like, oh, I need to get to that and get to that and get to that. And it's hard to put it down at night and just go back in the bedroom and watch TV or something. Because you walk out into the kitchen, you're like, oh, I need to be doing this or this or this. So that was my first thing. So my very first thing that made me start feeling like I was making money was being able to pay all my bills. Like literally, I can just remember the feeling of like, okay, the electric and the phone, and I got the rent. And I'm gonna mail them all, and nothing's gonna bounce. This is gonna be great. Ah, so excited. And then I remember like the first day this girl cleaned my house, and I thought, oh my gosh, I've died and gone to heaven. My house just smells like Pine Sol, and everything is just sparkling. And then I had someone doing all those other things, and then I was able to hire a crew so that they could be working on another rehab while I was working on one. And then I discovered wholesaling. And wholesaling changed my life. It's like, okay, wait a minute. I can get this house under contract. And instead of rehabbing it, I can actually flip this contract to somebody else Yes, I'm going to make less money, but I'm going to make it in a week, opposed to rehabbing for 2 or 3 months and then having to list it, wait for it to sell, and getting paid months between paychecks. So it did not take me more than a nanosecond to realize that wholesaling and flipping contracts was my path to success. Rehabbing was bringing it too slow for what I wanted. But also, you have to remember, I didn't have any experience. I didn't have any contracting experience. Everything I learned about it, I learned from going to Home Depot and taking classes. And I would hire people and I would have them show me what they were doing. So I knew how to do every single solitary aspect of rehabbing. I've even pressure washed swimming pools. I've done it all, put in toilets, cabinets, sinks, tile. I've helped the guys lay carpet, which is not a good job on your knees like that. Busted up my knee once. I've put on shingles on roofs. I mean, probably other than a tile roof, I've actually done everything. And so it's good. I think it's good to learn all that. I think it's good to know all that. I think it's great. But I loved flipping houses. I mean, I fell in love with it. My first year, I flipped 75 houses. I was like a crazy woman flipping houses. But then I started running into deals where I had a really motivated homeowner and they wanted to sell me their house so badly. Like, Duane, I'll just take my house, please, you know. And I wasn't able to get stuff worked out with the bank. So I thought, man, these banks are driving me crazy. So I just started calling the bank, like really randomly out of the blue. I'd never heard of the word short sale. I've never heard of discounting a mortgage or discounting a note or discounting anything. I'd never even heard those words to my knowledge. And I just called a bank one day and said, ask for the girl's name that was on the paper that the homeowners had. I said, hey, listen, I'm trying to work with these homeowners. And they, oh, this one's on the house. And I, if you could, like, I really want to help them, but they owe too much and I can't help them with this house. If you could just take a little bit less, I could buy this house. So back then, people were using shorting, discounting, just different things. And so I started talking to the banks, and the very first one, my very first short sale I ever did, I think, gosh, I wish I had the paper in front of me. I think they owed something like 67. I'm going to say, no. They owed 63,000. They owed 63,000. And I called them up and asked them to take 37. Whatever reason, 37 was a number I had. And they actually said, okay, like straight up on the phone. Well, okay, hang on. Let me put you on hold for 1 minute. And then they came back and they said, okay, we'll take it. I'll give it to you in writing and give me your fax number. And I thought, oh my God, the bank took less. But then, of course, when the bank takes less, what do you think? Okay, what's wrong with this house? What do they have? I don't know. Why did they just take less? Why did they take less without even like questioning my offer? They should have counteroffered me or something. What's wrong? And so that's how I started feeling after. But the first time I was just like, whoop, whoop, I got a house for 37,000 and I wholesaled that bad boy for 90. Yes, you heard right. My first wholesale from a short sale, the deal wasn't good. I called the bank. They shorted it. I flipped that contract to someone for $90,000. I was like jumping out of my skin for joy because I thought, man, do you know how long I have to be involved in one rehab to make that kind of money? I mean, I was like, well, how much is that? 50, over $50,000, 40, 56, 78. Yeah, that's over 50 grand. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I really couldn't believe it. I even called like my dad, like, oh my God, my mom, you won't believe what happened. How is this possible? So I thought I like stumbled on this thing, which I actually did. And so then I did another one. So like first four or five, the banks were really easy and they were like, yeah, hang on. And they'd come back or let me call you tomorrow. And I was getting these whopping deals. So then I, now at this point, you know, years have gone by and I'm started a RIA group in South Florida with my partner. And so now I'm running a RIA group and I'm calling banks and I'm getting them to do short sales. And I realized that there's nobody in the whole entire country Not a single person that's a trainer that's teaching short sales. So I trademarked the term short sales as it applies to real estate. So I do own the registered trademark on the term short sales. And I wrote a little 50 book training program, 50 page training program. And everyone, and I started having just people come to my house because, you know, again, I was starting into the business. I was learning how to teach. I was like, this is so exciting. I want to teach this to other people. And I remember my very first time I taught short sales. I had 5 people that came to my house and we sat in my living room and I did an all thing. I think I charged like $199, some really minuscule amount. And these 5 people came to my house and I taught short sales all day. And I thought, oh my gosh, I love teaching real estate. This is going to be the best thing ever. And then within a couple of years of that, of course, it became the hottest thing in the real estate. But I want you to know, no matter what anybody says, all the big famous people like Ron LeGrand bought my short sale program and learned it from me and made a program. The Kiyosakis asked Bill and I numerous times to teach short sales in their training session. And we never did, and they still don't have it. All these people, like, I don't even know who's still teaching anymore right now, because most of the people flaked off during the last recession. But all those people all came to my thing, all came to my workshops, all got my program, and then they started teaching, some claiming it for their own. But I've got the trademark, I've got the registration date on the first program. I can prove. I actually did the very first webinar on short sales with JP Vaughn from Cree Online. The webinars, no one had ever heard of them or done them. And I was like, we could do a call and, you know, like do it online. And so, and I kind of explained my concept. And I worked with another woman named Michelle Odyssey. And we did, to my knowledge, the very first webinar that was done way back. And it was 13 weeks long, every week for 13 weeks. Then I started working with JP from Cree Online. So go look this stuff up. And way back, like way, way, way back, and we started doing 4-week workshops, and they were live, and they were online, and all the stuff like that. So I started that whole trend and that whole part of that industry. So I'm super proud about that. And I know other people say, oh, no, I did the first one back in the 80s. It's like, nope, nobody has any, there's no historical record of anything being trademarked or copied or copywritten before me. So I'm standing my ground and I'm super proud about that. So now everything's going along. I have the hottest business in the country. I'm speaking all over the place because everybody wants to do short sales. And then this last recession came along. And I'm telling you, this last recession that started in 2008, 2009, it hit the country hard. I mean, I would say probably 50% of the people that I know lost their rentals, jobs, houses. I mean, my own family. It was just really tough, you know. Just all of a sudden, boom, there's this giant housing crash that just affected the country through 1,000 multiple layers. So I'm still doing deals. I'm still wholesaling deals. I'm still teaching. And we're still rehabbing. We're still doing everything. And I'm watching people just fall off of the mountain, man. It was like dropping like flies all around me. And then, so short sales got super hard to do. And people would always say like, oh my God, they're so hard, you can't do them anymore. But they never changed for me because I knew all the people at the bank. I have all the top list, like level 3 loss mitigators in my cell phone that had been with their banks for years and years and years and years. And if they leave, they turn me over to somebody else who's also a top tier mitigator. So doing short sales, it's all about relationships. Okay, write that down. It's all about relationships. That's why my business and my top students, our business didn't suffer. Because we knew the people that were above loss mitigation, they were above the asset manager. They were like, you know, 2 and 3 tiered asset managers in the loss mitigation department. So they were still taking deals left and right. And here's what happened. And this is why you think everything is so hard and so difficult. Because when you first tried to do your first short sale, say even 5 years ago, you had to fill out that stupid equator system with the banks. And the banks were not really doing them. And they were taking too long. And the paperwork, and. But if you were on the bank's side, this is what happened to the banks. So loss mitigation is the department within the bank that discounts and does short sales and works with you on getting, accepting less than what's owed as the full payoff. So that's what a short sale is. You have a $200,000 house, you negotiate with the bank, and the bank takes $100,000. So you just bought a house for 50% of the value. You have a $200,000 house, you buy it for $100,000. Now you can flip the contract, you can rehab it, you can keep it for a rental, you can live in it. I've lived in two, like for a longer period of time. I lived in two of the houses while my one house was being built. I found a house in a country club and it was stunning. Stunning, like multi-million dollar houses in this country club, gated communities. It was just a stunning house. I walked into that house and my chin hit the floor. I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to live here while they build my house. So I moved Ava, like one last little move, but she was still close to all of her friends. But I was like, oh yeah, no, mom's got a new house, a doorman out front. This is the coolest thing ever. But anyway, from the bank's point of view, I used to be able to call the loss mitigation people up and they just answer the phone and say, hey, Duane, what's up? How are you? What's your daughter? What's going on? And I say, hey, I need you to take this much. I've got this house. Here's the case number. And so I had gotten to a first name basis with everyone and to the point that I no longer had to submit packages. I would just call the bank up and say, listen, here's the address. You know, they owe $200. I want to buy this one for like, you know, $105. And they'd be, all right, let me call you back. Let me just talk to the boss, see what I can do. I'll call you back. I'll let you know what I need. So then they'd call me back and say, I need a sales contract. I need a listing agreement. I need 2 years tax returns from the homeowner. I need a hardship from the homeowner. And that's all we need. So even though my program shows you a whole entire three-step system, offer one, offer two, offer three, you may not even need that once you make a couple of contacts. So the average bank rep back then would probably have anywhere from like maybe 60, 70 files on any given day. Not really a lot, enough that they could personally talk to each of the people. If anyone was trying to do a short sale, they didn't have that much to do. They, you know, and the department was smaller and the short sales got really, really big. So people started getting more on their desk, maybe a couple hundred now. And there's, you know, 10 times the mitigators. But I'm already into this business for years. So I already have phone numbers of people that got promoted and then promoted again. And so I'm not taking the path that you're taking. I'm not calling the bank and asking for loss mitigation and getting a hold of someone and saying, hey, you know, my name is Swan. I do short sales for a living. And I have a short sale for this property here. Like, what do we need to do to get the deal started? I'm calling people up and saying, hey, girlfriend, this is Swan. I had this one girl named Venus. I was like, Venus, girl, Swan, what's up? Listen, I got a house. And she's like, all right, here, give me the number. Like, it was like that. And so now the recession is going and it's in full swing. And people are losing houses like crazy. And the government is putting in the HAMP program and the HARP program. And the Mortgage Forgiveness Debt Relief Act. And they're just putting in all these from the Dodd-Frank. And they're putting all this stuff in place because they're trying to stop this snowball that is getting ready to roll over the entire United States and suck up all the houses. But it's too late. They didn't prepare. The banks weren't prepared. People weren't prepared. Now, Bill and I were teaching our students 2 years in advance. Get your things in order. The market's going to crash sometime in 2008. Be ready. Have everything in land trust. Have all your rentals paid for or paid super low. Do not refinance anything. Telling our students, and we help so many hundreds of people get all their ducks in a row. So the market crashed, they're still renting houses, they're still going, they're still doing their business. I'm running a program called Shorts Done For You, where we're partnering shorts, and we don't have that program anymore, by the way. It just became so time intensive. It just wasn't, we don't have it. But I'm running that program during the downturn. We're closing deals left and right. Our closing ratio is over 90% the whole time. But what I'm seeing happen now is I call the people I know, and they're like, oh man, my mitigators, they're quitting on me left and right. The average mitigator now has 900 files on their desk. Now think about this. You're at a job where you have 50 or 60 files, maybe 100. You got 100 files, and you have to go through the paperwork, and you have to mitigate it. You have to say, okay, this one's going to go to foreclosure sale. This one filed bankruptcy. This one we're doing a short sale on. This one we're giving them a loan modification. That's your job. You know, like 100 files tops. Then all of a sudden, the market crashes. There's millions, over 20 million people in foreclosure, and now you come to work and you have 900 files. Now, as an individual person, you can't go through 900 files when there's more being laid on your desk every day. Okay, and I understand they don't just like lay the file on your desk. I'm trying to give you a visual here. So if you have a stack, imagine how high a stack of 900 files would probably be 3 feet high. And if every day I come and I add 25 more, and then Tuesday I give you 25 more, and 25 more, and now you have 1,000. And then in a few weeks, you know, you took care of 20 of them, and now you got 75 more, and now you have 1,100. And so what happened from the bank's point of view, they were inundated with foreclosures. They did not have the staffing at all, not even a nano dot did they have the staffing that they needed to handle this giant tumbling snowball of foreclosures. So what happened is they just stopped. No, we're not going to do foreclosure. We're not going to do any short sales. We're just done. No. Then they build this system. They pay someone, I don't even want to know how many millions of dollars, to build this Equator system. Oh, okay, good. Now we can go back and fill out this whole thing and get in the system, and we'll get assigned a rep. And what they tried to do, it just didn't work. What the banks tried to do was say they take me and all of you. All of us are lined up in desks and all those little cubby holes, little cubbyhole farms. And a file pops up and we look and we go, oh, okay. They talked to Joe Smith 2 days ago from my bank. He said we need a listing agreement. So I write to the people, the investors are talking to me. I'm like, well, you guys talked to Joe the other day. He says we need a listing agreement. And the real estate investors are like, no, I just want to talk to Duan. I just want to talk to the same person. I need some person to handle my file so I can get this deal closed. And the bank stopped doing that. You couldn't talk to the same person. You had to talk to whoever answered the phone on a big, giant phone rotation system. And I worked in two phone rooms in my life, and that was how it was. One of the phone rooms, I will tell you this, one of the phone rooms I worked in had 500 seats. Like, you sat down at a table that was a mile long, and there was rows, rows and rows and rows and rows of a table with a chair, with headsets, and a computer in front of you. And this company sold vitamins. So every time there would be a commercial that would run on TV or radio, the phones would just ring off the hook. And so it went to a rotation. So it just rang down the line. The first person answered, then the second person's phone rang, then the third person's phone rang, all the way around. It was 500 people that worked at this place. Now, when you start, they just stick you in the back. You're 500. So I'm in the last seat, and there's a sea of people ahead of me in this giant, giant, giant room. There's security. There's all kinds of crazy. I thought, what is this madness? Anyway, within a week or two, I get moved up. Then I get moved up, and within like 6 weeks, I'm in desk one. Why am I in desk one? Because I'm good on the phone. I'm good at selling people, and I liked doing it, and I always want to be best at whatever I could do. So it was another guy that was really good who had been in seat one that was now in seat two. So now Ted wanted to be in seat one. So every week it was a battle to see who could do the best, because I'd come in some days and I'd have to sit in the third seat. And I'm like, what? I am not sitting. I want seat one. Now, this person's sales were higher than yours. So I had the guy, Ted, was the main guy. We were always fighting for the first or the second seat. But we were killing it because we were really good. And so now I can imagine that these loss mitigation people, they are not trained to, I mean, and granted, I'm selling vitamins. I've got a script. I have to memorize it, learn it, and I have to learn about the product. And, you know, I'm selling one single item to a person that saw a diet commercial that wants to lose weight. Okay. And people ask me stupid questions. Can I still have three Big Macs a day and lose weight? Will those pills help that? I was like, seriously? No. You can't eat three Big Macs a day and still lose weight. No pill's going to help that. Stop eating Big Macs. So I don't even know what they were called. But anyway, that was just one of my very short-lived jobs, because the owner came in one day and I walked over to him. I was like, hey, I'm Juan. And I know now I look back and I laugh, because he just looks at me like, honey, you are one of hundreds of telemarketers. I don't even want to know your name. This guy has a person that drives him. He has a bodyguard. He has this woman that comes everywhere he goes, and she's constantly chopping fruit and vegetables and juicing stuff for this guy. And he's like some egomaniac driven guy. So I can only imagine when I came up to him what he must have been thinking. First of all, he was just sort of like, are you talking to me? Like, literally, are you talking to me? So I guess we weren't allowed to talk to the boss. So I happened to catch him in the hallway one day. I was like, listen, dude, you could do this and this and this, and here's how you could make your company better. And so, like all my other jobs, I would always hunt the owners down, tell them what they could do to make things better, and tell them they need to implement this and do this and do that. And most of the people didn't like being told what to do by someone that had less experience than them. But I learned I just had a natural knack for building businesses. I have actually started 10, all not all even within real estate. I have started 10 separate businesses throughout my life. Some I still do. Some I started and sold. And I'm getting ready to start a new one right now. So you'll be seeing about my new one soon. By the time this is over, you'll be hearing about my new one. So starting a podcast. So I'm starting an actual podcast business. So I'm starting another one, my 11th business. And so I'm telling this telemarketing dude, and then I get a notice like a day or two later. Oh, listen, we have to let you go. Well, you cornered the president in the hallway. You criticized his business. You told him what he needs to do. He didn't like your ideas, blah, blah, blah. And anyway, I got fired again from another job. So I should have just been an entrepreneur, stayed out of the gate. But I didn't think like that. I didn't have that lofty of goals. When I was 18, I just didn't understand business. I was raised in the Midwest, like grow up, get a job at a factory, put in 40 years, get married and have kids, and retire. So that's what I was told to do. So that's what I did after high school. My first job was a factory. And let me tell you, the day they did layoffs, I was on my knees begging God to give me one of those pink slips, because I hated working in a factory, but I was not about to quit a job because I had that good Midwestern work ethic. So back to the banks. So now, people that just do paperwork all day long, their phone is ringing from the minute they sit at their desk until the minute they get off work, and it's going through like a phone system where the call rolls over. So the person in desk one takes the first call, desk two gets one. If you're in the 20th desk, you don't get a call till it's the 20th phone call. But at this point, we're in the height of the recession. It's actually what is called the Great Recession. I think they gave it an official name of the Great Recession or the Great Depression. No, the Great Recession. I don't know. Look it up. I Googled it a couple weeks ago, but I already forgot. So all these people that are not salespeople, they don't know what they're doing. They're getting calls and calls and calls and calls and calls. And people like you guys, like, hey, just did a short sale class. I want to do my first short sale. Oh my God, I'm so excited. Because you're not following the scripts that I give you. And the people on the other end are like, okay, I have 900 files. I have 1,000 files. There's like 25 of us in this room. We all have 1,000 files each. And not only are we here, there's five floors of us. And we're in 10 different states. And it's just, there was just millions of houses in foreclosure. The banks could not handle them. And so it seemed like, oh my gosh, short sales went away. They didn't go away. If you knew people past the loss mitigation department, we know three-tier mitigators. So we'd call up and say like, hey, dude, we got this deal. This guy, Cliff, like, hey, Cliff, we got this deal. Here's the case number. Yeah, okay, give me a couple days. Let me get done for you. So we're still doing deals, and people are saying, Dwan, they're so hard. They're so hard. I tried for 6 months. I can't get the same person on the phone. I just keep getting rotated around. I get a different person every time I call. Nobody knows what they're doing at the banks. These aren't working. Oh. And that's all I'm hearing for years, 7, 8 years. It's like, guys, it's not that short sales aren't working. It is actually you, because you don't know people high enough up in the food chain. And you're stuck in this little hamster wheel thing that didn't work out. So the whole banking, you know, fill out the form system, it never worked. And people I know that were real estate agents, they were losing deals left and right. They were making agents negotiate deals instead of letting you negotiate your own deals. And all these crazy things were happening. So it appeared like that whole side of the bank just crashed and burned. And now it's so funny now because I see people that come up with new programs, learn how to do short sales, brand new concept. And I just look, I'm like, oh, dude, seriously? If you see anybody ever promoting wholesaling or flipping contracts or short sales as new, they only came on the scene since the recession and they are not new. And they are new. They're new. And they don't have any idea what they're doing. They wouldn't be saying, hey, here's this brand new concept. Because it's not a new concept. It's been around and it's been trademarked since the 90s. So if anyone says, learn this new thing, just shake your head and just go, no, I'm sticking with Dwan. She's been doing deals since, you know, the 90s, the early 90s. She's been wholesaling, she's been rehabbing, she's been landlording, she owns commercial property, she trademarked short sales, she started an industry. I just wrote a book with Steve Forbes. Stick with someone that's been doing it since before. I figure if anyone, any trainer was a trainer before the recession, remained a trainer and remained in real estate during the recession, and is still training and doing deals, I consider those people to be solid because they made it through without losing everything. Most of the trainers out there, if you notice, they all dropped like flies off the TV. Infomercials went away. All these big giant seminars that are back now, they went completely away. Everybody dropped like flies. 90% of people that were speakers back then are all gone because no one could make it through the recession because everyone had become a speaker and relied on selling programs, and nobody stayed in real estate. So I stayed in real estate. I'm in real estate still, and I'm a trainer still. So whenever you're interested in working with someone, you need to make sure that the first thing is that that person that's training you has actually closed real estate deals, because there's a lot of trainers that teach you that have not actually closed any deals. And you need to make sure they were doing it before the recession. If they popped on the scene after the downturn, we're in an up market. Anybody can do deals in an up market. Anyone can teach you how to do deals in an up market. It's not rocket science. Okay? Anyone can do that. The thing is, can people stick it out through a really, really dark period and come out still ahead, better, more successful, more money, more wealth? And if they can do all that, then it's someone I would be okay with you guys listening to. However, you know how I feel that you need to find the trainer that fits your vibe, someone that you have the same moral compass, and they hit your vibe, and you feel like, yeah, I hear this person. And if that person is me, then that's the person you need to stick to for all the rest of your real estate investing career. Because other people become shiny objects that distract you. And next thing you know, you're so distracted by this thing or that thing that now you're buying tons of programs and you're trying to make everything work. You're trying to print checks while you're sleeping and you're more frustrated than you've ever been before and you can't get a deal closed and your money's running out and you have to go back to work and then you give up. It's like if you just did it the right way, you wouldn't have had to do that. So just listen to what I'm telling you, do it the right way and you'll be super successful. I promise if you do everything I tell you to do, you'll be successful. Okay, so anyway, the banks are inundated. They're coming up with the HAMP program, and they've got the HARP program, and they've got, you know, the loss prevention. They, it's the loss thing. I can't even think of what it's called. Okay, forget it. I lost the word. I do that now. I'm having senior moments where I forget, I completely lose an entire word. And then in a few minutes, it's like, oh, wait, I got my word back. Wait, let's talk about it. It came back. So the word will come back in a minute. And I already said it, so you can go back and listen to it. And they're coming up with this and this and this. Like I said, Dodd-Frank, all this stuff. And people are just, you know, banks are just giving loan modifications like crazy. Just if you just call up and say, I'm behind on my payments, like, here's a loan modification. You know why they were doing that? Because they were so inundated with foreclosures that the bank couldn't handle. They even put like a moratorium on the foreclosures for a while. No foreclosures. Nobody's going to the courthouse. Because the banks had so many properties, they had no possible way to manage them. And there were too many houses sitting vacant, which brings in a lot of vandalism. It brings in drug use. Next thing you know, vacant houses become the place where all the teenagers hang out and like smoke crack and have sex and drink. And it was getting out of control. A lot of cities just completely crashed and burned. You know, like cities like Detroit, because the car companies left and the houses were all vacant and foreclosures were everywhere because everybody relied on a single industry. And like the whole town just gone, crashed and burned like it never existed. So it's good that people are helping bring and restore. And like Chicago, Lord of Mercy, no place needs more help in our country right now than Chicago. Like the whole United States seems to like help Chicago get back on their feet. This is crazy amount of people getting killed. This doesn't even make sense, but that's neither here nor there. So the banks are completely overwhelmed. They have so many houses that they are not even taking foreclosures. They're just giving everyone a loan modification. If you just called them up, you got a loan modification. People were getting them just sent to the mail. You're four payments behind. You know, just make the next payment next month and sign this piece of paper and send it back in. And they were just sending loss mitigation. They were sending loan modifications just across the board. Like thousands, hundreds of thousands of people just got a letter in the mail. Hey, you're 10 payments behind. If you can make the next month's payment, you're good. Make the payment, sign this thing, and you're done. Because they didn't have any way to foreclose. The courthouses were too booked up. People were found bankruptcy. Bankruptcy was the highest it's ever been, ever. Everyone's on food stamps. People aren't working. So people are just living free in their houses, and they're filing bankruptcy. And it was just out of control. But for a handful of people around the country, myself included, a lot of my students, some of the other trainers and their students who are really above board kind of people, we were still calling up our, you know, level three mitigators and getting short sales and flipping houses. And we were still doing the same thing. Like nothing really changed for me. And I'm not bragging. I'm blessed. And I'm happy that that worked out. But that worked out because of the amount of knowledge that I had. So now the banks are still have too many foreclosures. Loss mitigation still has too many files. They're still in every single solitary neighborhood. There's still vacant houses sitting there. Lights off, grass is overgrown. Obviously a vacant house. And in my little subdivision in Florida, it's just a very small subdivision. It's all gated. There's like five vacant houses right there in that subdivision. Just the weeds all grown up, pitch black, and everyone else has these beautiful lush landscaped houses on the water. So there's still houses like that. And in fact, I'm going to give you your first assignment in a minute, and it's going to involve these vacant houses. I'm writing this down so I don't forget to come back to it in a second. I don't want to lose a whole thought. Oh, and that thing was Mortgage Forgiveness Debt Relief Act. See, I may lose a word, but it comes back. All right, so now they're getting rid of the HAMP and the HARP and the Dodd-Frank, and they're getting rid of all that stupid stuff that was put in place that was supposed to help everyone. And all it really did was just create a bunch of people having to write new laws, pass new things, teach people at the bank how to do all this new stuff. And the banks would have just been better off during that whole recession. They would have been better off to just honestly take like 2 years, just tell people just live in the house, take care of the house, keep it maintained, don't let anything happen to it, and in 2 years start making mortgage payments again. Because it would have cost the banks hundreds of millions of dollars less to not get mortgage payments than to foreclose, evict, vacate, properties that's vacant, maintaining it, attorney's fees, bankruptcy fees, real estate taxes, forced insurance. It would have been cheaper for the banks to just let everyone in the whole United States, whether you're on time or not. Everyone in the United States don't make any payments for 2 years. Let's just get through the recession. It would have ended faster, would have been cheaper for every single person in the country, and it would have saved millions of people from foreclosure. Millions, like 15 or 20 million people. And it would have saved so many jobs from the banks and everything too. Because the loss mitigators just started saying, nope, we don't do short sales. Nope. Because nobody knew how to do them. Nobody at the bank knew how. You couldn't get the same rep twice to try to start a short sale or even to teach them how to do one. And the vacant houses were building up and the boarded up houses were just building up and building up. And finally, the banks were just like, that's it. That's it. No more, nothing. Everyone just gets a refinance across the board. We're done. Because it was too much. If the banks had really. And then the thing is, everyone kept saying, recession's coming, housing boom, the bubble, the bubble, the bubble. I mean, these bubbles are always bursting. It's the dot-com bubble. It's this bubble. Every bubble's bursting. And if the banks had listened to their own predictions about this bursting bubble, and if they would have had made better preparations and talked to someone, I tell you what, if the banks, the people that run all the banks would have talked to me, I could have prevented the whole thing. I would have told them, listen. Do this and come down to layman's terms here. Forget all this high finance crap. Let's just look at America, focus on the houses in America. Forget about the fact you're an international bank. Just focus right here at home and let's just do this. Do this for all the people. I'm telling you, we could have got through it so much easier. So now you come in, you're like, hey, it's 2016 or 17 or 18 or 19. You're like, man, I'm trying to do deals, I'm having such a hard time, the banks, and you're having a difficult time, and maybe you tried to start a couple years ago, and it's just not happening for you. And that is because the banks have not really fully even recuperated either. There's still people, right now today, there's still over 15 million people in some stage of default. Now, that doesn't mean they're in foreclosure. A default could be they're behind on a payment. Or they're behind on two payments, or they just missed three payments and they caught it up, or they just went through a loan modification and they failed on the loan modification, or they're just made their last payments, or they just used the last of their savings, or they just ran up their credit card and they're getting ready to default, or they're already in default or something. Okay, so there are over between 15 and 20 million people right now that are in some stage of default. So there's a lot of people that need help. And now the banks are like, okay, well, here's what we could do. We could pay the real estate investors a negotiating fee to negotiate a short sale. We could give the homeowners relocation or cash for keys. We could give them relocation money and they'll just move out. will give the deal to the investor. The house won't go through bankruptcy and foreclosure. It won't sit vacant. And we, the bank, don't have to deal with it anymore. Praise the Lord. Our prayers are answered. We don't have to deal with houses if we'll just work with investors. That's the answer to everything. And so now I'm going to show you how, over the next few weeks, how to get the banks to pay you to do these deals, how to get the banks to pay the homeowners to move. The banks were not stalling and holding back. They're still trying to deal with all the vacant houses that they have. In fact, one of the banks, Bank of America, some of these bigger banks, Wells Fargo, some of these bigger banks, they're spending over $40 million every month. This is not a year. Every month, over $40 million, 40 million, every month to maintain all of the vacant properties that they've got. And by maintaining, that's forced insurance, it's keeping up with the real estate taxes, keeping the yards mowed, it's keeping up with whatever has to be kept up with. So most of the banks that are giant banks are still to this very day spending in excess of $40 million a month maintaining vacant properties. So do you honestly think they want another vacant property? They do not. This is why beating the bank is so important right now, because you are on the cusp of this almost being like a new thing. It's new again. It's like, yay, the banks are not inundated. They still are, but they can deal with it better now. They don't want houses back. They'll give me a short sale to get it off the books. They'll pay me to short it. They'll pay the homeowners to move. This is the best. So that's why I have to do this Beat the Bank boot camp right now, because this is a whole new era for the short sale business. And I'm super curious how things are going to change. Of course, I'll keep you posted through my blogs and my websites, and I'll keep you up on everything that's happening. But through the next 6 weeks, I'm going to teach you all the things that are working today, and then I'll keep you updated as things change, because things will change in the next couple years, because the banks will get smarter, they'll work more with investors, they'll sell more houses in portfolios, which will bring bulk buying back. Because that's been gone. If anyone tells you bulk buying is back yet, it is not. But it's fixing to come back. So, see, that's my little Tennessee. It's fixing to come back. So, things are turning. And you'll just see. Things are. But we're just not 100% there for the bulks and things like that. But for the short sales, we are all on. So, I am going to give you some homework. I know you feel like I didn't teach you something tonight, because I didn't just talk straight about short sales the whole time, but I taught you more than you realize. If you don't have any idea how the bank works, you are already lost before you started, because you don't have any idea what you're dealing with. You have to, you know, it's like when you're in a competition. You know that old saying, never underestimate your opponent? Never underestimate your opponent. Okay, so working with banks, it's like being in like a taekwondo fight, a martial arts fight. You're on this side wanting to win, and they're on this side wanting to get a better deal. And it's really whoever knows the most is the person who's going to sort of win that competition. So every single individual short sale is like a little tiny mini competition. It's like, okay, I've got to deal with Wells Fargo. I've got a deal over here with U.S. Bank. I've got two loan servicing companies over there. So let me see. I'm going to use my super powerful kung fu skills in my mind, and I'm going to out-negotiate. I'm going to show them I know more than they do. My kung fu skills are strong. They are weak. The banks are weak. And if you keep that mindset, you'll get all your deals, because the banks are weak, and we are strong, and we will win. So I need you to understand the mindset of the bank. Now, you got to remember, even to this very day, Loss mitigation reps still have 600-700-800 files. So they're still in, and it'll take the bank 20 more years to catch up on all the stuff they have now. And that doesn't include all the stuff that's coming up. So the banks are a hot mess right now, but they've come enough to their senses to be like, you know what? We need real estate investors in our circle of people that we work with, because those are the people that know what they're doing. They're getting these houses sold. We need investor-friendly real estate agents that can get houses listed for us. They know what they're doing. And we need to stop working with all these crazy fools that bought some print crap in your sleep and are trying to send the bank a million pieces of paper through an email or fill out a form or fill out something. They have no idea what they're doing. Okay, the banks have gotten a little wiser, thank God, because there for a while, the banks just suffered from this big case of unpreparedness and a big case of stupid. But, you know, and it's their own fault. They got themselves so completely unprepared for what happened that they couldn't deal with it. But in return, it made a lot of homeowners homeless, put people out of their houses, and a lot of investors went broke. And I'm sure all of you know people that went broke during the recession. I know so many people, not that I know like personal, because anyone I knew personally that was having trouble, I tried to help every single solitary person that I could. And I was still teaching a lot and trying to get students like, listen, pay attention everywhere you go. Help as many people as you can. The recession is just going to keep being worse. It's worse, it's worse, it's worse. It's going to last a couple more years. Help people, help people, help people. So we were in just a desperate attempt to try to help as many people as we possibly could. And luckily, we were able to help thousands of people. But thousands doesn't compare to the millions that suffered through. And maybe even you. You may have lost your job. Maybe that's why you're learning about beating the banks today, because you did lose your job and you lost your house and you're still not back on track and you're making money. Maybe you have a new job that doesn't pay as much as you think you're worth. How many of you right now are getting paid less than what you believe that you're worth? Well, see, right there's the problem. If you think you're worth more and you're not getting paid more every day that you go to work, you're selling a day of your soul for getting paid less than you value yourself. So, you know, why would you not want to work for yourself, especially right now? Now's the time. This is a good up market. Get involved in real estate. All right, so I want you to listen to this call a couple times. I just want you to get your mind wrapped around the bank. So you're at the bank. You're standing in the loss mitigation room. You're looking at a sea of people. 99% of the people have had that job for less than 7 months. The loss mitigation turnover averages 7 months. So you're looking at a sea of people. 7 months in. Next person, 7 months, 7 months. So it's constant. Those telemarketing chairs are turning over almost daily. There's still thousands of foreclosures coming in. But now you're going to learn how to do them differently than everybody else. And you're like, hey, I'm getting deals closed. I'm making friends within the bank. Oh, I got the asset manager's contact information. Then you get the next level, a second tier. Like, hey, I've got this guy's. And then you know what happens when the next recession comes along? What happens to you? Nothing. You keep going, doing your business. Maybe you're healthier and you do better, but nothing happens. You know why? Because now you have contacts. Now you have game. Now you have strong contacts. Your kung fu is strong. And you go through the next recession and the next upturn and the next downturn and the next upturn and the next downturn and all the cycles that happen every 7-8 years, you know, your life, because you're learning what you're learning today. So I've been in this market for 20 years, over 25. You know, I've seen all kinds of crazy markets, and I've been able to survive every single solitary one of them. And the worst recessions seem to get at this point, the easier it is, because I don't have any competition during that time. So I can go talk to any homeowner in my whole entire mountain that we live on. I can get anybody's house, because the people that just think they're investors and they're not really, they all drop like flies when things change. So I don't want you to drop like a fly. I want you to be smart and educated, and I want you to be able to be successful no matter what happens in the future. We're on a really good upturn right now. The market is going to take a little tiny swing in the next 6 to 8 months, a little tiny dip, not a crash, just a tiny little dip. Then it'll be stable for a couple of years, and then it's going to go back down again. So you're at the top right now. Learn now. Make money now. So when it crashes the next time, you don't get caught with your pants down. And think about things from each person's perspective. If you want to flip your contracts, you have to have a house with a ton of equity. Well, if there's no equity, you're going to have to do a short sale. You're going to have to learn how to beat the bank. Okay, if you want to rehab it, you still need a ton of equity because you've got to put money in it. If you don't get that money back, you might go broke yourself. So you have to learn how to beat the bank. You know, if you want to move in a house yourself, don't you want a really good deal for yourself? Of course you do. So whatever it is you want to do, you need equity. You need there to be enough equity in the house to make it a good deal. And if it's not a good deal, you make it a good deal because you learn how to beat the banks. You learn how to do short sales. You participate in this boot camp. You do every single thing I ask you to do. And that's how you become a successful real estate investor. So your first piece of homework, your first official assignment is as soon as you hang up from this call, I want you to go online and go to banditsigns.com. B-A-N-D-I-T. Like a bandito. Banditsigns.com. Or wherever you want to buy signs from. I like their signs. They're nice. They're beautiful. They're sturdy. Get some yellow and black, yellow signs with the black printing. And I want you to order a couple different signs. Get some that say, we buy houses cash. Get a couple that say, rehabbers wanted, maybe 20. Get some that say landlords wanted. So actually do 25 that say we buy houses cash. I'm giving you this on the fly. Rehabbers wanted, get 25 of those. Landlords wanted, get 25 of those. And then get facing foreclosure with a question mark, get 25 of those. So I want you to order 100 signs. Okay, everyone needs 100 signs. Now I'm going to tell you right now, do not let me find out that you went and bought some cheap-ass cardboard and made handmade signs. I don't care what anyone tells you. I am telling you for a fact. People are on this kick now. Well, when you use handmade signs, you don't seem much like, you don't seem like a company that's going to pounce on people. Listen. You are getting ready to help someone move on from the biggest asset they'll ever own in their lives, which is their house. I will tell you one thing. If I am losing my house, you bet your ass I want a professional person helping me. I do not want some tacky dollar sign, handmade piece of crap sign that screams to me. This is what that sign says. That sign says to me, Dwan, I'm a handmade sign because we're so cheap and broke, we can't afford to buy signs. But I want you to sell me your house that you love, but I'm too cheap to buy signs or too broke or too inexperienced. That's what that sign says to me. I want you guys to have professional signs. Get the large size. If you go to banditsigns.com, they have small ones and large ones. Get the large size. If you want to order them someplace else, certainly feel free. But I'm telling you, other people's signs are cheap. They don't stand up to weather, rain, snow, whatever, tornadoes, hurricanes, whatever you have. They just don't stand up. The H stakes, the little H-shaped stakes that go in the sign that go on the ground, the stakes are super cheap. And please don't make handmade signs. I am telling you right now, when we, Bill and I travel, like usually once a month, we speak somewhere. So we travel typically once a month. And I will tell you, When we travel, we always go out and do stuff in the various cities. When I see someone that has a handmade sign, I call all of them. So I'm like, hey. So first, I assume they know me. Like, hey, this is Dwan Twyford. How are you today? And they go, good. I go, I'm a national real estate trainer. Do you know me? No. And I say, hey, I saw your sign over there on the telephone pole. And it looks like you made a handmade sign. They go, oh, yeah, man. And I'm like, how long you been investing? And I mean, I swear to you, I get kicks out of this. And I'm like, and I say to people, I say, listen, I gotta be honest with you. I've been training for over like 25 years. I've trained hundreds of thousands of people at this point. I sold over 500,000 training programs. I'm a celebrity expert. I am an expert. I know what I'm doing. That sign is so cheap and so tacky. If you actually want to make any money in real estate investing, you need to take that sign down and get some real signs, because there's nobody at all with half a brain that's going to work with you with that cheap sign over there. That sign screams, I'm broke, I'm poor, I don't know what I'm doing. And I listened to one phone call and got two little tiny gold nuggets off it. I'm trying to wing and invent the whole entire wheel. I'm reinventing the wheel. So don't do that. Get signs that look like you are a professional, because you are a professional. So let me ask you this question. Who knows that if this is your first deal, who knows that this is your first deal? I'm sorry. Did you say nobody but me? Yes, you did. Nobody but you. So if you're standing talking to a homeowner face to face or on the phone or online, they are not going to say, is this your first deal? Nobody says that. They're going to assume that because you are working with them or contacted them, that you know what you're doing. And you do know what you're doing because you're learning it from me. So no one is going to ask you, is this your first deal? Are you new? No one's going to ask you questions like that. So if you don't want to scream, I'm new, then get signs from a professional company that look good with very little verbiage, like the tiniest amount. Like, we buy houses for cash and a giant phone number. And if you put an email, just put a tiny one. But make sure your email is really easy. You can't be like Bob and Sally buy houses on the east side of town.com. It's too long and no one can see it. And nobody can read it. Everybody looking at your sign is driving by where you're going to put the signs. Okay, so they're driving by. So all they really need to see is the word cash and the word house and a gigantic phone number. Everything else is wasted space. It's clutter. People that tell you otherwise, they honestly don't know what they're doing, or they don't actually use signs to find deals. Now, Bill and I individually have actually been investing for almost the same amount of time. He started off as a real estate agent. He was an agent, I think like 7 or 8 years. He was an agent, and then he started working with investors and foreclosures, and he came over to the dark side with us and became an investor. And let me tell you, life is way better on the dark side. I'm kidding. We're the good guys. The banks are the bad type of people. That's why we want to beat the bank. So he's been investing. So together, we have almost 50 years of experience. And out of all the ways that all the people teach, and all the ways that we teach, and all the things that are out there to find deals, the number one thing that we do this day, this very day, we just did this less than a week ago. We go out once every couple months and we put bandit signs in the yards of vacant houses. Okay? We put them in the yard of vacant houses. So now, vacant house, what does that mean? That means if you pull up in front of the house and it's vacant, but there's a sign from a real estate agent saying house for sale, you're not going to put your sign there because it's listed. If you pull in front of a house and it looks bad, looks like it should be vacant, go look in the window to make sure, because I have put signs in the yards of houses that people lived in because the house was such terrible shape outside. I thought it was vegan. In fact, a couple years ago, we were training a student. I have a student in the car with me in the apprentice training. And we both get out and stick a sign in the yard and get back in the car. And I was like, oh, you know what? Hang on a minute. We need to go double check this house is vacant. So as this student is walking up to the front door to peek in the window and make sure the house is vacant, the owner opens the door. And we're standing there. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe it. This house is so beat up. The grass is 80 feet tall. You couldn't, spider webs, you couldn't even think a person would be living in there. And like this old hippie guy is like, hey, man, what's up? And I just started laughing. So, of course, I jumped in because I didn't want the student to be freaked out. And I said, hey, listen, I'm sorry. We're driving down the road. I saw the grass was really tall. I thought the house was vacant mistakenly. And I just stuck the sign in the yard. And I said, you know, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. I don't want to offend you. Let me just grab my sign. He was like, no, tell me about that sign. So we showed him fly-by houses cash signs. He goes, hey, listen. He goes, will you pay me if I let you keep that sign in the yard? I said, yeah, if anyone calls and says I'm calling about that house and they give me your address, I'm able to work out some kind of deal with them because obviously you're staying here and your house is not vacant, nor is it on the foreclosure list. If I'm able to sell them another house or help them in any way possible, I give you $500 per deal. So he's like, good. He has put like 3 or 4 signs all on my front yard and stick them down at the edge where people can see them through the weeds. So we put 2 signs on each side of the sidewalk. And left him there. Oh, it was so funny. So I don't know what became of that because the student doesn't wear his signs. So it was so funny. So here's what you're going to do. I just want you to start off by just learning how to drive some neighborhoods. So pick a couple neighborhoods that would be like on a 1 to a 5 with 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. Pick 2 or 3 neighborhoods that you would consider a level 2 or a level 3. Now, a level 1 is like the hood, where like if a bomb went off, it would look exactly the same. A 5 is totally gated, really nice house. You're not getting in there. So find something like it's a 2, a 2+, 3-, or a 3. Nothing below a 2, nothing above a 3. Find a couple, and you'll just know. I call them the good hood. They're like the good hood. They have a nice mixed race of people, Hispanics, black people, white people, blue-collar type stuff. A nice, older, good hood, solid neighborhood. And I want you to get 25 signs out before next week. Okay, 25 signs out. In the yard. And I don't even want to hear a single solitary excuse. Like, well, I have a job. I take the kids to soccer. I have all this stuff. I couldn't do it. Yeah, you can. Listen, after you get off work, just drive through a neighborhood on the way home. Go out of your way 5 minutes, drive through some neighborhood, and you'll find vacant houses. Almost every single solitary street in America right now has vacant houses. So make sure the house is vacant. Make sure it's not a real estate sign. Doesn't even matter if it's in foreclosure. That's not what we're doing. We're putting our signs in the yards of vacant houses for free advertising. So the people that live in the neighborhood or come through the neighborhood are going to see your sign. And it'll say landlords or rehabbers or foreclosures, facing foreclosures. Or it'll say we buy houses cash. And a landlord will say, hey, I saw that house. You looking for some landlords? And you say, yes, I am. I'm going to be flipping some contracts. I'm working on 3 or 4 deals right now. And you're going to go through how to build your rehabbers list, which is in your 30,000 in 30 days program. People says, hey, landlords, I'm interested in rehabbing. You're going to say, I'm working on my rehabbers list. You're going to go through the scripts. You're going to go through the rehabbing, how to build your buyer's list. You're going to build a buyer's list because we're only going to talk a week. You order your signs today. They'll barely be here by next week anyway. And but you pay extra to get them here, so you can get 25 of them in the ground before next week. If anybody calls, you just open your programs and read right off the page. Okay? But I need 25 signs in the yards so that your phone will start ringing. Because I'm not going to be able to have you close the deal by the end of this boot camp if you don't start getting some people on the contract right away. And you have to do that. You got to find them. So I don't want you to be out door knocking. I don't want you to be wasting a bunch of money on postcards. I've got a student that called me last week. She says, Dwan, I said $600 and I mailed postcards. I only got 3 calls. What am I supposed to do? I said, A, I told you not to mail postcards. I said to put out signs. So you should have spent that $600 buying signs and putting signs out. But now you just wasted $600. So go back and put out some signs and call me back if you have signs out. So don't be resistant to what I'm telling you. I'm giving you the path of least resistance. This is the easiest, quickest, fastest way to do it. So don't fight me on it. Don't think you have a better way. Don't reinvent my wheel. Just do what I'm telling you to do. If you want to mail postcards, you can mail postcards later. We're not mailing postcards at all in the next 6 weeks. I'm assuming everybody that's a student, everyone on this call is new and it's your first deal. And I can't let you waste a bunch of money on stuff that's not going to pay off for you. So we're doing the path of least resistance. We're doing quickest way possible, inexpensive. Okay? So get yourself 100 signs. I want 25 signs out in the next week or within 1 week of when the signs arrive. At the end of the 6 weeks, I actually want all 100 signs out by the fourth week. 25 a week to the fourth week. In the fifth and sixth week, you don't need to put signs out. You're going to take a break because you should be getting so many phone calls that your phone is ringing off the hook. And since you have to learn what you're doing, I don't want you to lose a bunch of people because you have too many people calling and contacting you. So I don't want people to slip through the cracks. I don't want you to lose people. Okay, you got that? So you go to 2 and 3 neighborhoods. You look for yards, houses that are vacant. They're so easy to spot. I tell you, I wish I could do the apprentice training with every one of you. That's where we come to your house and we work with you at your house or your office for 2 days in your state. And you have your signs and all your stuff. And we go out and door knock and talk to people and drive neighborhoods. I show you what neighborhoods are like. It's really so much fun. And I wish I could go with each one of you this week and just help you find places to put your signs out. Because there's so many things that y'all drive by every single solitary day that you don't even realize the house is vacant. So I'll give you a couple of examples. If the obviously simple things like yard, snow, things like that, you know, not being cut, whatever. But look at other things. There's always a porch light on, just the front porch. All the lights are out, house is dark, there's stickers all over the window. There's a porch light. The mailbox is overflowing with mail. Look at the driveway. If the driveway has grass growing up through the cracks in the driveway, that means there's no cars driving over it every day coming to and fro. So if there's no cars driving over it, the grass grows up through all the cracks. And if the yard is mowed, look at little things like that. Is it edged? You know, like, is it cleaned up? And if not, those are the maintenance people for the banks just coming in, whipping in there, mowing the yard and leaving. And there's stuff all along the fences and around the trees and the bushes. And they just don't pay that much attention to detail. So find houses, put out 25 signs. No street corners, no telephone poles, no median strips, no handwritten signs, especially no handwritten signs on a telephone pole. Nothing, nothing, nothing. In the yards, vacant houses only. And if the house happens to sit on a corner, put one in each side of the yard facing both of the streets. And your phone will start ringing. And as it starts ringing, you start working on your buyer's list. And the scripts are in your programs. Read all your programs. Also, make sure you all have Skyped me by this point. It's Dwan Benton Twyford. You just type it in, send me a friend request. I will absolutely not friend you. It is your job as a grown-ass adult to friend me and ask me questions. It is not my job to hunt you down to beg you to ask me questions. If you don't want to ask me questions, that's fine. But you got full access, 100% full on access to me right now until you close your first deal. So whether you use it or not, it's completely up to you. You want to ask me questions? Great. You don't? That's fine too. But I will not call you. You've already been told to Skype me. Ayla's already contacted you. I will not send you any reminders. If you are not mature enough to Skype me on your own, probably ought to look at where you're at right now financially and think if maybe those two things don't correlate somehow. Oh, Dwan, that was so mean. Yeah, I know. I go there all the time, so you'll get used to me. I don't have much of a filter. I find the older I get, the less of a filter that I have. So I have to be careful about that because I'm just like, man, I got to be careful. You know, my mouth's going to get me in trouble one of these days. Well, actually not. It got me fired from like all my jobs in my 20s, which made me become an entrepreneur, which now is helping me start up onto my 11th business. So, and now I'm teaching. So, you know, I think my mouth's been a good asset for me, my voice. So anyway, I want the signs out. Don't do anything else. Just get out signs. The house does not matter if it's in foreclosure or not. We don't even care. We're not looking for foreclosures. We're looking for people to call our signs that might be in foreclosure or might want to buy a house from you right away. You got it? All right, guys, listen. That's all you got to do. Get your signs. Listen back to this call. Read your programs. I just really need you to really, really, really have a real good, solid concept of the bank's point of view, because that makes this whole entire Beat the Bank boot camp so much easier if you honestly can understand where the banks are coming from. That's the key, understanding the bank. All right, guys and gals, I will talk to you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Get your signs out, read your programs, do everything I told you to do. Skype, Skype, Skype. Ask me all the questions that you want. And I'm looking forward to next week, and I'm really looking forward to everyone having a deal closed by the end of this very boot camp. So have a good week. God bless.